Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Alan Lichtman, the Distinguished Professor of History at American University, who has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the latest just concluded. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
And how many victory laps have you been doing, Alan? I mean,
mostly been doing some sleeping after an all-night election eve, but I have to say this is now 8 elections in a row. Actual advance prediction, not a claim that, you know, I've accounted backwards for elections. Backwards, the keys to the White House go all the way to 1860, but forward, the keys to the White House have anticipated the outcomes of every election since 1984, often years ahead of time. And no other system has anything close to this kind of record. And as you know, because you heard me say it on your air, I first predicted the 2012 election in an article in the International Journal of Information Systems in January 2010, nearly 3 years ago. The keys can do this, unlike any other system, because they're not based on polls or anything like that. They are based on what actually drives and explains elections, and that is governing, not campaigning. The keys are a gauge of whether or not the party holding the White House has governed well enough to get 4 more years. There are 13 of them, and if the party holding the White House loses 6 or more, they're out. And often way ahead of time, you can discern how the keys are likely to turn. And as of January 2010, I only had 4 keys turned against the party in power, and that gave them a 2-key cushion. And ultimately, after the elimination of bin Laden, I only had 3 keys turned against the party in power. And as you know, I stuck to this with all of the ups and downs in the polls, the Obama meltdown in the first debate. I insisted you've got to keep your eye on the big picture, that it's the fundamentals of governing, not the day-to-day events of campaigning that counts.
So, Alan, let's also talk about your other book, White Protestant Nation,
yes,
The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, because nationally, Romney won the white vote 59% to 39%. So Romney won 6 out of every 10 white voters, but still lost. What happened?
A couple of things are happening, and this is really important. I'm glad you brought it up. Number one, you used to be able to win easily with the Republican base, which is the white Protestant base, and conservative white Catholics. But that's a shrinking demographic base. The nation, number one, is becoming increasingly non-white. Everybody has commented on that. That's nothing new, although I've been commenting on it since my book in 2008. By mid-century, we're going to be a majority non-white country. Texas is already majority non-white, and their politics is going to change over the next generation. California's majority non-white. But there's a second thing that no one has talked about. More and more Americans are becoming non-religious. They don't strongly identify with any particular religion. That's also a rising segment of the electorate. And that is not a group that Republicans are likely to tap into. So doubly, they're working against the grain of American demographics and trends in American religion. There's also something else operating here that nobody has touched upon. More than at any time since the 1920s, and you know this well, Ian, the Republican Party is the party of American conservatives. There used to be a lot of conservative Southern Democrats in the Democratic Party. They're all gone. Conservatism is now embedded within the Republican Party. But conservatism, as I wrote in my book, White Protestant Nation, in 2008, is imploding from within. It's not something the Democrats are doing to conservatives. The conservatives' problem is there are deep contradictions within the conservative political philosophy that they're completely unwilling to face up to. Let me give you just a couple of simple examples. Conservatives claim to be the party of fiscal responsibility and limited government. But who built the biggest, most expensive, most intrusive government in the history of the United States? George W. Bush. Certainly the most conservative president we've had since the 1920s, even more conservative than Ronald Reagan. He increased spending more in his first term than Bill Clinton did in all of Bill Clinton's two terms. The deficit went down under Bill Clinton. It ballooned under George W. Bush, even in times of relative prosperity, before the economy began to melt down in 2008. Second example, conservatives claim to be the party of states' rights. And yet, if you read their platform, they want a constitutional amendment, right-to-life amendment, that would eliminate the ability of any given state to set its policy on abortion. If you look back to George W. Bush, he quashed regulations in California designed to reduce carbon emissions, not allowing the states to set their policies there. Final simple example. Conservatives have always claimed to be against, and they hate this the most, social engineering, right? We're not going to social engineer to solve poverty. We're not going to social engineer to repair the healthcare system. And yet in Iraq and Afghanistan, they've engaged in arguably the biggest social engineering programs in the history of America, not even here in the United States, but in much more distant and foreign cultures. And finally, there's this huge split over immigration between the business conservatives who favor immigration reform and bringing in lots of people with skills and expertise, and the staunch ethnocentric social conservatives who want to crack down on illegal immigrants and close our doors. Those are four contradictions that run to the heart of the conservative movement, and they haven't even begun to address them, much less resolve them.
And indeed, the contradiction of being against social engineering in the United States, but through drive-by democracy and undeclared and unnecessary wars, we're trying to impose it on Muslim countries that are resisting the American empire. Nothing more absurd than fixing potholes in Kabul and not fixing potholes in Main Street, USA.
Exactly. So, and, you know, as I said, the leaders of the movement haven't even begun to address it. If you read the commentary, you know, it's like putting a Band-Aid over a cannon wound. You know, we got to reach out more to minorities. We got to have more minority faces. We got to have a better message. We have to have better. None of this is even remotely approaching the deep and enduring problems that conservatism faces. And until they confront those problems, they're not going to solve anything.
Again, I'm speaking with Alan Lichtman, the distinguished professor of history at American University. Both of his books are very, very topical at the moment, White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the latest just concluded. Now, you mentioned that Texas is a non-white state and America will soon be a non-white country. With a non-white majority, I should say. Texas, of course, the Tea Party basically got wiped out in most cases around the country. But in Texas, they managed to elect Ted Cruz, one of their Tea Party
yes.
favorites and a rising star.
Of course, Hispanic. But let me tell you what's happening in Texas. And the reason why Texas is still a solidly red state is, number one, the overwhelming minority there is, of course, Hispanics. And a lot of the Hispanics are not yet citizens. And a lot of them who are citizens are not yet mobilized to vote. It's a slow process, but it will change. I can't tell you when, but at some point, maybe 20 years from now, Texas will go from a red state to a purple state. That is, it will become a competitive state once enough Latinos are citizens and once enough of the citizen Latinos register and vote. It's not going to happen overnight. but it is going to happen over the long run. And if Republicans, you know, can't have Texas as a solidly red state, their long-term future as a party is grim.
Well, you mentioned, Alan Lichtman, in effect, that what the Republicans are now saying, fewer of their more moderate voices are saying, we've got to reach out to Hispanics and women and the young. But everything that I'm hearing from them is essentially is they're treating it as a public relations problem.
Exactly. That's the point I made. Exactly, yeah. Right. It's like putting a Band-Aid over a cannon. We need to have, you know, better messages to the media, better rhetoric. We need more Latino and black faces to present at our meetings. That will do them absolutely zero good. You know, Latinos and other minorities, they're smart. They're asking, how do your policies affect our lives? And on every level, from tax policy to deregulation, to a welfare policy, to immigration policy, to education policy, Republican policies are inimical to Latinos. So just, you know, changing the PR face of the party, as you correctly point out, will do absolutely nothing.
And Bill O'Reilly, his postmortem is that the Democrats won because the people that vote Democrat just want stuff from the government. I'm quoting him.
Yeah, we've been hearing that, you know, from conservatives since the New Deal. Roosevelt won in 1936.
Right.
One prominent Republican said, you can't beat Santa Claus.
So, in other words, there's not much evidence that the Republicans are really learning and that they're really interested in changing their policies.
No, and this is, you know, a pivotal moment for Republicans, really. And this is a chance for the kind of rebuilding effort that actually did after the Goldwater defeat in 1964. It took a while, but during the 70s, with the Heritage Foundation, Phyllis Schlafly's Stop ERA, the Conservative Caucus, NICPAC, the Business Roundtable, both ideologically and structurally, the Republican Party truly rebuilt and rebuilt under adversity, but there's absolutely zero sign that they're going to replicate that in the early 21st century.
So, Alan Lichtman, given the demographic realities, and what kind of country do you think will be in, say, 2016, when a lot of the punditry is suggesting it'll be Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush?
Well, that's going to be a very interesting election, obviously, presuming that's the case, and the chances are it won't be. I can't tell you who it will be, but any given prediction is likely to be wrong, although I do think the Hillary Clinton side is more likely. That's going to be an interesting election because, again, Jeb Bush is considered among all top Republican leaders, with the exception of, you know, Marco Rubio, who is himself Hispanic, the white Republican who has done the best job of building support with Hispanics. So that'll be a real test of whether
he's married to a Colombian woman.
I don't think it will be.
He's married to a Colombian woman, I believe.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't think that's enough. You know, it's interesting. The conservatives for decades have been blasting Democrats for identity politics, you know, for blacks who are voting for black office holders, for appealing, you know, on the basis of ethnicity or race. And yet that seems to be the only answer Republicans have for their dilemma with non-whites is to replicate identity politics. It's, you know, one of the great ironies of this very shallow debate that's going on within conservatism. They should read my book and see what they did in the 1970s when they really rebuilt their party and rebuilt their at least ideas to some extent, but they're not coming close to that now.
So the other statistic that was surprising, given that Paul Ryan, just before the election, made that extraordinary statement to the evangelicals in a phone call hosted by Ralph Reed, where he said that Obama is out to destroy Judeo-Christian Western civilization values. And
I thought Franklin Roosevelt had done that already, but let that go.
well, it was such an absurd mouthful.
Of course.
But in terms of the Judeo part of it, 70% of American Jews voted for Obama. Only 30% voted for Romney. And that's in spite of all the money that Adelson and all the the Netanyahu weighing in, and so there's some real serious losers in this one. Karl Rove, Adelson, Netanyahu, and Paul Ryan, the Tea Party favorite.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer group of guys, I have to tell you. You know, these are hardball politicians, every single one of them, who play, you know, life and death politics. And they all lost, and that's the way it goes. You know, they reveled in their hardball win in 2000, and in a sense they deserved it because they played better politics than the Al Gore people. Well, now they're outplayed, and they are a dying breed. They're fighting against the trends of America, the religious and demographic trends. And what worked in 2000 and barely worked in 2004 has no chance of working in 2016. They've got to do something different.
So does that mean, that hope is a more... has a better chance than fear? Because I think, you know, if you'd break it down in the simplest terms, those that voted for Obama were giving him a second chance at hope and change, and those that voted for Romney were motivated by, you know, xenophobia and fear. And maybe you got some better analysis than I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was certainly some of that. I think that may be a little overstated. But regardless of that, let me argue, xenophobia worked for a very long time in American politics. You know, it worked in the 1920s when we got the Immigration Restriction Law of 1924, which essentially shut out my ancestors, the Jews and Catholics from Eastern and Southern Europe. And that endured till 1965. That wasn't repealed. But it doesn't work anymore because the base is too small. You know, the Karl Rove strategy is do whatever it takes, whether it's fear or ethnocentrism, to rally the base. And that very barely worked for two elections. It's never going to work again for Republicans because they have the shrinking base, which also explains why Republicans are so anxious to engage in these rigorous voter ID laws to cut out early voting, because they realize they can't grow their base. But maybe they can prevent parts of the Democratic base from voting. But these were such outlandish efforts that virtually every court that reviewed them struck them down, many of them including judges appointed by Republicans. It wasn't partisan courts at all. In the Texas case, I think it was two of three judges had been appointed by Republicans.
So I mentioned earlier that Bill O'Reilly's postmortem of the election is that the people voted for the Democrats because they want stuff. But the real question now is, will this second term of Obama's, will he be tougher than he was in terms of his first term, where he really did apparently believe in reaching out and finding compromise or even bipartisanship? I suspect he's learned his lesson. But one of the big lies of American politics is, apropos what O'Reilly's saying about how the left operates on patronage through social programs, the truth of the matter is that the right in this country operates on patronage due to government programs that are essentially socialist, but because it's largely military spending and agribusiness, it's not noticed.
Military spending, agribusiness, and corporate subsidies, guarantees, and tax breaks.
Right. So when are we going to have that debate to at least explode the myth that we have right-wing welfare in this country? We don't have what social democracies have. We have this peculiar capitalist corporate version of welfare.
Well, you know, the guys who kind of attacked that but really weren't much listened to were Ralph Nader, of course, in 2000. He wasn't much listened to. He had his own flaws as a candidate. Another very flawed guy, but who has pointed some of this out coming from the other side of the political spectrum, of course, is Ron Paul. And, you know, he got nowhere with this argument. It's a very tough argument to address. And when are we going to address the fact that today 5% of Americans control 40% of the national wealth? There has been a multi-trillion dollar transfer of wealth from 90% of us to 10% of us over the last 30 years. Multi-trillion dollar transfer of wealth. And finally, are we ever going to address the issue of climate change and the environment? I think, you know, those three issues, which we haven't even begun to address, much less resolve, maybe the biggest challenges of the 21st century.
Well, just in closing, Alan Lichtman, given what you just said, what about, though, the other change that needs to be done in America, and that is to restore our democracy and our economy, which is becoming a kind of corporate plutonomy, and our democracy is largely in the process of being captured by oligarchs.
You're asking me to resolve all our problems.
No, I'm not asking you to resolve it. I'm suggesting.
I've long been an advocate of complete public financing of campaigns, I think.
Right.
Both parties are in the grip of the big money interests. Of course, you have to change the Constitution or radically change the Supreme Court to do it. And the truth is, you know, we're not going to change much the corporate economy until we get rid of the subsidies, the guarantees, the tax breaks, the legal protections. All that has to go. And there has to be a much more robust and progressive labor movement in the United States. The union movement is almost dead.
Well, Alan, the reason I brought it up was that Wall Street gave all their money to Romney this time, and they're not used to losing. But are they going to learn anything from that, do you think?
I hope, you know, that they'll learn something. You know, they tend not to. But the truth is, Wall Street will do just fine under Obama. If you look at the statistics, in fact, the stock market goes up more under Democratic presidents than Republican presidents. The economy goes up more under Democratic presidents than Republican presidents, and unemployment is lower under Democratic presidents than Republican presidents. That's just a fact. Those are well-known, well-published statistics. So my final note is, don't worry about Wall Street.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who is a distinguished professor of history at American University. He has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the latest one just concluded. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And the conversation continues at Facebook/IanMastersMedia. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The headline written down.